This is Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio. Good morning, I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. The Middle East has not gotten a lot of attention yet as a campaign issue this election season. There's been some lingering talk of former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton's place in the Benghazi controversy, and some talk about the Iran nuclear deal. But largely, the campaign has been about domestic issues.
One expert on Middle Eastern politics and policy says that might be for the best. Geneva Abdo points out there's a lot more to Middle Eastern policy than how the United States interacts with the region. Abdo is a Middle East expert and non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council in Washington, and she was in Milwaukee this week to speak to the Milwaukee Rotary Club. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Well, so let me start this way. The reporting from the Middle East is this sort of relentless depiction of a place in turmoil, the ongoing civil war in Syria, the broader rise of the radical Islamist movement, the Iran nuclear deal and its sort of tenuous state. Let me ask you this. Are there stories from the Middle East that we are not hearing but should?
Well, there are definitely stories from the Middle East that we don't hear about, and it is overshadowed by war and violence and doom. And I think that one of the important stories that we don't hear about is about youth in some countries and the emergence of very active, politicized younger generation that really has emerged since the Arab uprisings. The Arab uprisings inspired them, they empowered them. And in some countries, they are pressuring governments to develop economies so that there isn't brain drain, so that young people can actually remain in the countries where they were born rather than seek employment, for example, in the Gulf, in United Arab Emirates, or in Qatar, where there are more job opportunities, or even the West. So, I think that that's one positive thing that's happening that we don't hear so much about.
This is sort of going on in parallel. I mean, we hear a lot about the rise of radicalized youth, but this is politicized youth.
They're politicized youth, but they're also youth interested in developing their own economies. And I think that, you know, in most countries, if you look at a country such as Egypt or Tunisia or Jordan, Lebanon is facing a lot of crises right now, but there are a lot of youth in Lebanon that if they had the sort of institutional support of a state or the institutional support of a real solid civil society, then there would be a lot of progress in terms of jobs, improving the job situation so that youth remain in their own countries.
What have we learned in general from the Arab uprising so many years down the road?
We've learned so much. I think the first thing that we've learned is that religion matters. It's religion stupid, I guess, as we like to say in the U.S. And I think that that's something that the West has not really absorbed and understood since the rise of Islamic groups, and not just violent ones, but moderate ones since the 1970s. So the uprisings in many countries that began seemingly as a secular movement, right? Because what people were chanting on the streets during those heated days in 2011 were, they were chanting a slogan in Arabic, which means, you know, we want to overthrow the system. So that was the goal. But what happened in many countries is that because in some places the dictators weren't overturned and in other cases there were a series of revolutions, such as in Egypt, it was clear that religion became a very important part in the uprisings. And this is why we are seeing, for example, this terrible violence that is occurring between Shia and Sunni Muslims in Iraq, in Syria, in Yemen. We're seeing also that even the case of Bahrain, where the uprising began again, it was to create more democratic governance, that now the Shia and the Sunni are more polarized than they've ever been. And then, of course, you have even more disturbing than that is the rise of ISIS, which is a very extremist, sectarian movement that uses religion. They're not talking about religion. They're talking about how they've instrumentalized religion. So they use religion to try to gain recruits, to try to fight against people, to gain territory. And so I think that that's one big lesson that we've learned. And another lesson that we've learned, which I think is important for Americans to understand, is that Western powers have a lot less say in the Middle East than they had before the Arab uprisings. To be perfectly honest, many Arabs don't really care what the United States thinks. They care what the United States does, but they don't care what the United States thinks. Because the Arab uprisings, they happened because Arabs wanted to be in charge of their own destinies. And they happened also because in a lot of places you had a whole history of either direct or indirect control by Western powers of these societies. And people have had enough of that. Whether it was during the colonial period or even in Egypt, you know, after the uprisings, there was a large discussion about whether Egyptians wanted their government to keep accepting aid from the United States. So it's all about self-determination, and that means less role for foreign powers.
That's not something that foreign powers are always used to hearing.
No, and it's not something foreign powers want to hear sometimes. And I think that you have to talk about, you know, what this means for the next U.S. administration and the next president. And we've heard all sorts of remedies that are going to be applied to the Middle East. But I think that it's a lot less up to the U.S. government. You know, we have now Gulf countries that are upset with the administration because it made a deal with Iran. We have other Arab countries upset with the United States because they're repressive and they get criticism because of their repressive policies. There are Arab societies not happy with the United States because of what the United States did in Iraq and what it didn't do in Syria. And so I think that the people running for president have to be a little bit modest in what their prescriptions are for the region, because it's not necessarily up to them anymore.
Well, would you contend that the best prescription for them to have would be no prescription at all?
A lot less prescription. There's a big debate where I work in Washington on that very issue, particularly among former Democratic leaders such as Madeleine Albright, others who are have been in past administrations, are leading very important discussions about what should the United States' role be, if any. What room is there for the United States? And I think that the answer that reasonable people have reached is that there needs to be much more effort on the United States' part to engage Arab societies. So it's not just about state power anymore, because the states have been delegitimized. They don't have the credibility they had anymore. So we need to pay a lot less attention to what the states are doing and much more attention to the needs of Arab societies if we're going to help them.
So how do we engage with societies at large versus just engaging with the states?
If you look at some of the work that the United States Agency for International Development is doing, they're doing a lot of really important work in a lot of Arab countries, and it's about development. So it's about developing societies. It's about improving environments. It's about building jobs. And I would say that that's should be the direction of the future, not trying to dictate what the political future is for these countries.
If you were the moderator at a presidential debate, and I think we can all imagine ourselves trying to be the ringmaster in one of these this year, but and probably want to stay away from that task. But what questions do you think the candidates ought to be answering about the Middle East?
That's certainly not an easy job. I think that the kinds of questions that the candidate should be answering about the Middle East involve, you know, are we still, number one, are we still going to repeat the same patterns of not calling out our allies, the states, on the terrible things they do to their own people? Question number one. Because what has happened sometimes during the years of the Obama administration is that other priorities have trumped human rights. So we've decided we're not going to talk about human rights violations because there's too much of a political cost to that. So I would say that one question would be, are we going to pay more attention to human rights violations? And this goes along with paying more attention to Arab societies. I think the second question really is a very important one, and that is, are the candidates running, are they going to maintain the pivot that's occurred? Because the Obama administration has pivoted toward Iran. That's clear. So are we going to maintain the pivot? There's a nuclear deal that has empowered Iran It's also empowered Iran militarily. So are the candidates going to maintain that? Or are they going to sort of call the Iranians out on what they're doing in Syria, what they're doing in Lebanon, in Yemen, in Iraq? I think that's a very important question.
Well, so and you've been critical of the Iran nuclear deal. And so let me ask you, if not for the Iran nuclear deal, then what? Or what's the broader cost of potentially scuttling that deal?
The way the administration framed the whole negotiating process was that we had to make a deal with Iran because they were going to develop a nuclear weapon. And frankly, if you look at the whole history of Iran, it was very unlikely that they're going to develop a nuclear weapon. So the reason I was opposed to it was primarily because the premise was false. The second reason is that there was no accountability. It was a single-minded negotiating process. So there was no questions asked to Iran, okay, we're going to lift sanctions. We're going to lift your millions of dollars that are in the deep freeze. We're going to do all these things for you. Now you're going to be able to sell your oil on the world market and make zillions of dollars. Now you're going to be able to re-enter the international banking community. What you have to do for the Arab world is you have to curtail your activity in Iraq. You have to curtail your activity in Syria. And so there was never any compromise that was made on other issues with the Iranians. So in my view, as a result, they walked away with the store. So they got a lot of goodies, but there was no accountability on other issues that are important to Arab societies.
Well, and so is this another example of the need to engage a society versus the need to engage a state?
Yes, because the perception now, and this is very important, I mean, I travel all the time in the Arab world, the perception now is that the United States pivot is toward the Shia and toward Iran. And the majority, of course, of people that live in the Arab world are Sunnis. So some people have even told me, for example, that they went to fight in Syria, the Sunnis. Some people told me this in northern Lebanon, because they thought that the United States has shifted toward the Shia and toward Iran, and so they have to go and fight because otherwise they have no one to help them. And so the perception is very important. Perceptions are reality in the Middle East, and the perceptions are very important.
As you look back, I mean, I gather you would point to the Iran nuclear deal as a major missed opportunity in the Obama administration. Are there accomplishments do you think it deserves credit for over the last 7 years?
In the Middle East, I would say no, to be honest. I think that if you look at, so they began with the Israeli-Palestinian problem. That's also intractable. There's been, if anything, things have gotten worse. Some people think they should have intervened in Syria. I don't want to really weigh in on that question, but look what's happened in Syria. Assad remains in power, and now the country is effectively partitioned, and ISIS controls territory in Syria. Iraq. So the decision was made to withdraw from Iraq, but look what's happened in Iraq. ISIS. Country is divided, and there's a government in power, which is a Shia-led government, but they have a lot of problems with legitimacy, and they have a lot of problems controlling the country, and the military is not all that powerful. So it's almost as if every country in which the United States became involved, I'm not saying that necessarily the outcome could have been any different, but I don't see any progress. I don't see any positive result of the United States involvement.
So whoever takes office in January has his or her work cut out for them.
Definitely. Most definitely.
Well, Genevieve Abdo, thank you so much for shedding some light on this for us.
Thank you, Mitch. It was great to be on.
Genevieve Abdo is non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council in Washington and author of a forthcoming book whose working title is The New Sectarian Post-Arab Uprisings. She was in Milwaukee this week to speak to the Milwaukee Rotary Club.